Welcome. It's SV Pod. Welcome back to the big man. Stanford Steve is alongside. How are you, pal?
I have a thought I need to get off my chest, by the way.
All right, good. I got something serious I'm going to start with, too. But you, the floor is yours. Begin.
No, you go. You go. You do your thing.
You going to save your thought?
Yes.
Is it funny?
I don't know. It's strenuous and deals with children.
All right. Well, then let me begin with this.
Correct.
All right. Got you. So I don't want to save this till the end because I don't always know, like, you know, podcast gets going, we get in the weeds late. Maybe y'all listeners tap out. I want y'all to hear this because it's important to me that we begin with a memory and a story of a friend who passed away this weekend. That's Tom Weisskopf. I would call him a legendary player. He's not in the Hall of Fame, which is kind of odd because he should be. He was a 16-time winner, won the Open Championship 1973, a course designer of massive acclaim. I mean, his resume says Hall of Famer. Had 10 top five finishes in majors outside of winning at the Open, including four runner-ups at Augusta. He was a dude. Legendary line. 86, Jack Nicklaus is in the middle of that incredible charge. Jim Nance, his very first Masters, is in the tower on 16. And he says, "Tom Weisskopf, what's going through Jack Nicklaus's mind right now?" Without missing a beat, Weisskopf said, "If I had any idea what Jack Nicklaus was thinking, I'd have won this tournament a couple of times." And then he proceeded to say, "Jack knows this is destiny is in his hands. He's going to hit a great shot. Nicklaus stuffs it to a foot. He wins." But Tom's a guy that I was lucky enough to get to know because he called some golf, including with us at the Open Championship, St. Andrews, 2010 must have been the year that he and I were together on the road hole for 4 days. Now, what I want you all to understand about calling golf at the Open Championship is that you're in this tiny little trailer. And Tom, I'm big. Tom was a big man, everybody's 6'3", 200 and whatever. And there are these two giant men sitting side by side in a trailer on the road hole at St. Andrews. And we're in there for like 12 to 14 hours a day. And it couldn't be more awesome because you're calling golf. There's a YouTube of me and him when Miguel Angel Jimenez plays the ball off the wall. He's up against the road hole wall and he stoinks a wedge off the wall, goes up in the air, lands on the green. That's me and Weisskopf. So it's great fun, but you're in there for hours. And over the course of the time, you start to chat a little bit about stuff. And Weisskopf, who is a proud Ohio State Buckeye, had that great kind of distinct, or at least distinct to me, kind of Midwestern accent. At some point, I guess Tom's getting kind of curious about who the hell is this big lummox I'm sitting next to. And Tom says, "Scott, are you married?" "No, I'm not married, Tom." "Yeah, you ever been married?" No, I haven't actually." "Oh, you got a girlfriend or something?" "Yeah, I do, Tom." Pause. Longer pause. Wheels are turning in his head. "Scott, how old a guy are you?" "Well, Tom, I'm, you know, just turned 44. Now he waits a little longer. We're sitting there. Just so you know, your mics aren't always on. Like, we're off the air, obviously. And it's at this point that Tom Weisskopf says to me a line I think of often and have quoted often. Tom says, "Scott, you don't want to walk the back nine alone." And I said, "I got you, man."
Wow.
And I said, "I got you." I proposed later that year. It's been more than 10 years. Steph's my wife. You know the story, my kids. And it wasn't just what Tom Weisskopf said. He didn't change the direction of my life, but it's what he said and how he said it that resonated with me. And I thought, I hear you. And he had told me, like, again, like we you bare your soul over 14 hours. He talked about his life and mistakes and, you know, things he'd wish he'd done better and done different. And, you know, he, listen, this is a legendary dude in a lot of ways. I mean, you read about him. He didn't chase a good time, man. He caught a good time. Okay. He caught it and lived a big life and was an incredibly elegant dresser and had one of the swings that was the envy of tour players. Andy North said, listen, walking up and down the range, pros don't watch other pros swing. Like, they're pros. We watch Weisskopf swing and just shake our heads and go, look at that SOB. But the life he lived, you know, was amazing. And I have never in my life seen Andy North laugh harder than when he gets to telling Weisskopf stories. And I've never heard a better storyteller than Weisskopf. Some of them, what he'd tell on himself, and others were about other people. But he would laugh, and it was just incredible. He would just hold court. And somehow I got to become friends with this guy. And on Saturday, I missed a phone call and then got a text from Lori Weisskopf. And that's who he walked the back nine with. She's awesome. And she was awesome for him because he became the best version of Tom Weisskopf on the back nine. And I think a large part of that is because of her. And she shared something with me. I knew Tom and I, we just, you know me, right, Steve? I mean, I try to be friendly to people, but I you know, I don't always meet somebody that becomes a friend immediately. Weisskopf and I just hit it off. And she shared with me, Tom thought the world of you, and he enjoyed every second he got to spend with you. And I thought, wow, man, well, right back at you. Cause I was just like a kid eating ice cream, listening to the guy talk. And I just want to say thanks to Tom for the line about the back nine. And we've talked a little bit about it lately on this podcast about being on the back nine. And I'm glad I'm not alone. And I'll miss him. And I'm just really, really happy that I got to become friends with Tom Weisskopf. What a man that dude was. Whew. Legendary cat.
Yeah, it's one of those guys. It's hard to find a bad word about him. And what I keep going back to when I'm reading about him, hearing you talk about him, seeing there's a couple things on the Golf Channel I saw online, you know, people talking about him. He's just, it doesn't feel like he's just an old timer, honest dude. You know, like he didn't hide anything.
Nope.
He was going to tell you how he felt.
Yep.
And the honesty, man, like just the stories, it's just like, yeah, he really did that? Yep. Yes, yep. He did.
And listen,
he said that? Yes, he did.
And he grades his own life with a sharp pencil. You know, he's not an excuse maker. Like I said, I mean, he was, you know, he took harsh inventory, felt stuff that he felt like he could have done better that he shared with me. And again, what a legend, what a storyteller, what a life. Lori, as the wife said, he lived a big life. Yes, he did. It was massive. And I'm glad I had a tiny little line in a page somewhere along the way. All right. You got something on your chest you want to get off? Go.
Off that. I don't know how to transition off that.
It's fine. Just take a left turn.
All right. I'm just going to say this. We really need school to start. The house, the house is just mayhem. One of the worst things in the world is hearing daycare before it starts, when school starts, is closed for the week before. And I get it. You guys got to get everything ready, but boy, is it a lot. I mean, we got all five in the house.
Yep.
I'm trying to go up and down doing radio shows, podcasts.
Enough.
I mean, I just hear pounding upstairs.
You know, we do the optimism meter for the Mets. Steve, where's your patience meter? Mine's really low. Today in the house, I'm just like, why is everyone yelling? Realizing, of course, who else is yelling? Daddy. Well, why? Because he's just screaming about I don't even know what. Where's the bus? And I ride a bus, but just, is there a bus they could get on? Well, send them anywhere.
I need to see a bus. Just give me hope that it's coming. Anybody start school around or earlier? I mean,
no.
Well, we've started a thing, Scott, in our house where I don't wake up to screaming and yelling. I just wake up to a 3-year-old wearing, let's just say, 9 different pair of mom's high heels and walking around upstairs on the hardwood floors. It's a beautiful sound. It wakes me up every morning, and it's incredible how loud a 3-year-old can be. It's amazing. So I just wanted to say we need school to start.
Let's go. Let's wrap it up.
I mean, the popsicle intake is getting to a crazy limit, and we need to get off of the popsicles and get back to school, and let's get on the potty and get this thing going.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right. So with that said, we're off and running. Week 0 here in college football. You've honchoed some of the heavy lifting. You've got some BP fastballs just to chuck your boys way here to talk, because I'll fire them right back at you. But I know you've been, I said, let me know where you want to go here, because we could go in any direction. You've done some of the scouting, run the scout team for us. What do we got?
We've gotten pretty top heavy in college football, obviously.
Yep.
And last year, I remember going on Russillo's pod, and he asked me, you know, what's going to be different this year? And last year I saw a path for multiple teams that weren't Clemson, Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, because I saw youth at the quarterback position with guys that really hadn't played at Ohio State and Alabama. And I thought that was the year to get him. You better get them now, or else you're going to be getting after it. And yes, two of the Georgia beats Bama. People can say what they want. Two SEC. I don't care. I just feel like this year, those two teams are going the distance. And I feel like it's weird. I talk to people around Georgia's program, and they're super confident. And then it's crazy how everybody's trying to nitpick the champs. You know, are they going to be as motivated, this and that? I want to know, do you feel the same? Do you feel strongly about what you saw from Stroud and Young, that they're good enough to carry those, knowing they have astounding talent all over?
Yeah, yep.
But do you feel the same?
I do. I think about Ohio State last year when Oregon got them early. You thought, oh, look at this. Well, what you realized about Ohio State was it was their defense that was the issue. Now, the offense, remember Michigan State went in there? Michigan State was good. I mean, they're highly ranked, but that defense was iffy. Stroud threw 6 touchdowns in the first half. I mean, it's video game stuff. But, look at what Utah hang on him in that insane Rose Bowl. Put a big number up. So, I think what I'm getting at is early on they looked gettable, and then Stroud, remember people were talking because yours is there, and it's wondering, is he the guy? He's the guy. And now obviously you got new coordinators on the defensive side trying to button some stuff up. Day is not BSing. He's like, we're gonna tighten the belt here one more. It might be uncomfortable. I don't care, because we're not gonna let stuff slip. So yeah, I don't think Michigan has to probably take it. I think they're good on offense.
Yeah,
but don't they have to be worse on defense?
I mean, you would think you lose, coordinators, you lose 2 edge guys.
This is really where the answer is yes, and what they've proven is, and this is what Georgia has to prove: can you absorb the loss? Not just the loss, not a drip, drip, drip. But I'm talking the drain opening up on talent. Can you lose that many first-round guys and just not miss a beat? Because I understand recruiting at an elite level. That's how Dabo's done it at Clemson. Mm-hmm. But then you just assume you could lose Lawrence and like, yeah, we'll be good. Are you?
Mm.
That's a lot to ask. And that's why this sustained excellence that you see in Tuscaloosa and Columbus and Clemson, I'm not saying you haven't been great. You've been great. But like last year was a shock to the system when it happened. So Bama and Ohio State at the highest level have shown they can lose starters to the NFL and sustain. So, yeah, I you know, who's beating them? Mm. I mean, I don't know. Somebody might. Somebody might. Yeah. I mean, hell, A&M beat them last year. You know, A&M got them down in College Station.
Ohio State's got to come to the snake pit late.
Piggy had a wide open guy on a 2-point conversion. They could have beat him. They could have beat Urban. Lost by a point. How that happened, I'll never. Actually, I know. They just the offense got going. It's hard to see paths for them to lose. So they might, but the answer to the question is, yeah, they feel like this year feels like there's a line underneath them, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yes, I do. And I'm one of these. I'm putting Georgia on that line too. I think they do have enough to withstand it. I do. Big name programs, all new coaches, Oklahoma, Miami, USC, Notre Dame.
Uh-huh.
Who interests you the most out of those?
USC. Yeah, I mean, I can make a case for each one. Yep. OU, how many guys did you tell me, new guys they got lined up?
They 50? Have – Venable said they have 50 guys that are going to – that have never put on Oklahoma jersey before game one.
That seems like a lot. So that – sure, that's interesting. And you go from – offensive-minded guy to a defensive guy.
Yep.
Very interesting philosophical change. Miami's interesting because Miami fans, God, you all are an interesting bunch. Woo! You guys have been running around with swag that was this dated. The freshness date on your swag is old. You don't care. You've been talking. The U is back. You're kind of like East Coast Texas. Anytime something good happens, you try to say you're back. And here's the thing I always try to make clear. I want you desperately to be back because the sport is so much more fun when you actually are as good as your arrogance suggests you are. So I'm rooting for Cristobal to get it cooking. I think that's interesting. And Notre Dame's interesting just because I really like their coach. And yeah. I'm rooting for him because he's hard not to like. But SC is the right answer for me simply because when SC's right, they're one of one because of that whole Snoop, Will Ferrell, Hollywood. Now, they're not the pro game in town anymore. You know, there's two teams there. They were back in the day, literally. They weren't supposed to be, but they were. But there's a vibe, you know, the song girls and the Coliseum and Fight On and Traveler and all the stuff that comes with it. But Lincoln went out there and inherited a bad team, man. Okay? Bad. We talked about it with Feldman last week. I watched him end of the year. Hell, I had him, plus the points against UCLA. I wasn't getting 30. That's what I needed, 30. And you can go out and you can get a whole bunch of offensive talent, and you have an offensive-minded coach, but how much better are you on defense? Now, the thing that's interesting is what are the biggest obstacles in that league? Who's the biggest obstacle? Utah? I trust them more than I trust Oregon.
I think UCLA is going to be good.
Okay. Good for Chip. I mean, yeah. they put it on USC last year. But you know what would really be fun? Big Ten Scotty rivals. It'd be so much fun if SC and UCLA became a thing again, like a real-life thing, a real crosstown thing. But okay. So you like UCLA. What I'm getting at is for me, it's USC for the reasons I just laid out. Each one's interesting because they're all massive brand names. Sark year two in Texas is interesting. How much patience is there down there on the 40 acres? Not a whole lot.
Mm.
You punted on Coach Herman pretty quick. So you need to be good down there. So who's the answer for you? Who do you find the most interesting one?
I think it's Oklahoma to me. Because I love the idea of Dillon Gabriel getting back with his offensive coordinator that he was at UCF. And I love the idea of Venables having his own deal. I mean, he's been doing it a long time.
I agree with that.
Interested to see. Like, he can't coach games like he called defenses. He's going to get a flag. He's on the field.
Yeah, his get back coach needed a six-figure number down there at Clemson.
The overturn of guys, but they, I think like they got a, they're the transfer. I think it's a running back, wide or quarterback, left tackle. All these guys are going to be transfers that start for them, and that's what's taken over.
Does that worry you? I mean, because I
just want to see how it plays out.
I got you, because in basketball, you see how the portal is. I mean, it's different there. You five guys, you need one. Like, look at Manek at Carolina last year. He was the perfect person for North Carolina to get. And it didn't show itself initially, but by March, when it mattered, he was out there. He was a killer. Mm-hmm. He's a three-point shooter. And he did it for Oklahoma, interestingly enough.
Yeah.
And he left and went to Carolina. That's all they needed, was that very specific thing that he could do to help spread things out. And when they got everything going, they come probably a minute away from winning a title. But to have 50 new people, that's a lot. With a brand new coaching staff, that's a whole lot to just throw in the pot and have it turn into a coherent meal for a guy who's doing it for the first time.
Yeah, and I just think about all the close games they won last year. All right, one last before we talk some NFL fantasy.
Yep.
Most interesting or game you want to see the most, week one.
I alluded to it with Feldman last week. It's because it's so interesting in terms of the matchup. Speaking of, like, I'm trying to think of the analogy. I'm not going to try this hard. You have an SEC school in the humidity in the swamp at night with a brand new coaching staff and apparently a support staff that numbers in the thousands. And that the Napier era begins against a top 10 team from the Pac-12. I mean, it's just not a matchup you get very often, knowing, by the way, doesn't Florida play Kentucky week two?
Yes, they do, at home.
So you got two chances early against a top 10 team from Utah that comes to your joint, and then an SEC East team who's, I think, predicted to do better than you.
Yeah.
And the direction, I mean, already people down there are bummed out because they're worried about recruiting and, you know,
collective.
All of it. And I'm married into a family of Gators, you know? So I'm familiar with sort of what and they're all reasonable people. But the SEC is just filled with fan bases that just there's and what I say the SEC like it's only them. I think they're just at the highest level of we're not having it and we need to be good. And so you're playing a really good team. I'm going to have the Gators for the limit in winners. Right? I'm going to have to. I don't, you know, I may fade myself because I don't want to go against Utah because that's, boy, at the end of last year, they were a wagon.
Mm-hmm.
They gave it to Oregon twice and they were trading punches with Ohio State in that Rose Bowl game. But that's just fascinating just because you just never get like those things. They're just like totally opposite. I'm trying to think. It'd be like I don't know what. I'm going to stop searching for an analogy because I can't think of two things that feel more different that just aren't ever on the field together to start the season than that. And so, because if you win, it changes the direction and the sense. Boy, you're fired up. You're ready to go. Now Kentucky comes in. You're ready to kick their ass. And off you go. Or you lose, you're like, uh-oh. Man, if we lose this, we're 0-2, and they're Napier, they're mad. Got to go. So that all that's what makes that the most interesting game to me week one. You're zeroed in on what?
It's a conference game. It's Penn State and Purdue, because I have no idea what to expect. But most importantly, I was reading a thing about Purdue, and I don't know what I always find myself pulling for Purdue in the NCAA tournament in basketball. Whenever they're good, I love. I think it comes down to I love Painter and I love Brohm as coaches. I think they hit home runs in those hires, and I know what people could say what they want about Painter not going to Final Four. I don't care. He still is a really good coach.
Agreed.
That place is going to be bananas. I read a thing where they've never had this before. They had a 93% renewal rate for season tickets. And I just think it's awesome because they're not good all the time. And they were good last year, but I don't know if they're going to be good this year. And Penn State comes in with, you know, the recruiting and Clifford. Are we going to see the freshman quarterback? You know, they're going to be in there in the all whites coming in. Like, that's going to be a high, high energy atmosphere. And I don't know who's going to win. I really don't know who's going to win. Penn State, if they play their best, they're probably the best shot at Ohio State. But you've got a lot of young dudes coming in, and you got to go on the road to a team that is just – I think they found themselves last year. I know they lost two NFL guys in Bell and Karlaftis, but that is going to be a great, great atmosphere, and I'm just dying because I don't know what's going to happen.
I think James Franklin's just had about just enough of opening on the road in conference. Like, they had to go to Madison last year to start the year. I mean,
yep.
who'd we upset? How do we keep drawing this card on a Thursday night in West Lafayette? Bang the big drum. I mean, that's a tough ask. That's a lot to ask early of a team. I agree. I think it's a very interesting matchup. If that were a Saturday matchup, it would be in winners for sure. I mean, it just fits the bill, doesn't it? Home underdog.
Yes.
Little underdog at home.
Cheap.
Come on.
Cheap.
Before we move on, a couple of things going on at ESPN that I wanted to share with you. First, 30 for 30 podcast presents The Longest Game. In the spring of 1981, the Pawtucket Red Sox and the Rochester Red Wings met for a minor league game. Over the course of 33 innings, the two teams would make history. This episode features archival sound and accidental treasure trove of the game's play-by-play broadcast and interviews with those who experienced it firsthand. Listen now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Also, College Game Day, the podcast hosted by the great Reese Davis and Pete Thamel, will get you ready for week zero in college football. Look forward to expert analysis, guests, and insight when it comes to what you need to know this season with College Game Day every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. Now All let's right. get to the important stuff.
Yep.
How many leagues?
Four.
Four fantasy football leagues.
Boy, is that stupid. What a stupid thing
to
do.
How many did you win last year?
I cashed in... I didn't win any, but I mean, you could, judging from the the drop off, I mean, you could argue, didn't I win? I didn't win the championship in any, but I did make two finals, so
okay,
did all right.
That means money to me.
Correct.
I got a question for you.
Uh-huh.
You're in every kind of league.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, I mean, I'm not in any. They're all like, most of them are just regular sort of PPR leagues. There's one that's a two quarterback league, which gets confusing because you're doing your mocks and you're trying to remember the philosophy that you're supposed to employ, things like that.
Okay, pretty much across the board, Josh Allen is the number one quarterback in all mocks and leagues and fantasy outlook, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
Do you think he's in his own tier when you project the season?
Yes.
Really?
I do. That said, I think Herbert is – I mean, there's a line under Allen, but Herbert's not miles beneath him, because, and it depends on how, like, does your league value throwing touchdowns more than rushing touchdowns? Is it a 4-point touchdown passing league or six or whatever? I don't even know who I am. Honest to God, I don't. 2010 version of me that talked to Tom Weisskopf would be listening to this going, wait, what happened? What happened?
Hmm. What happened to that guy?
What happened? Did I get a fever and my brain gets scrambled in my brain? What happened? No, no, Scott, you just became fantasy football crazy. No, I think Herbert's there. The really interesting one is Mahomes, because with no Tyreek Hill and a little bit of a question about, all right, so who's, I mean, it's Kelsey and then who else? And then Rodgers loses Devontae Adams. You can get Rodgers for like a ham sandwich and a bag of Cheez-Its in the 10th round, which is kind of crazy. Because I have a feeling like, you don't think he can throw a touchdown or two to Tonyan or whoever's out there? Of course he can.
Yes.
I mean, I don't.
Same thing with Mahomes.
No, the Mahomes' stock hasn't fallen from a fantasy perspective nearly the way Rodgers has. It's wild to see. Now, my guess is these mocks are you're in a league with some guy that's going to just be sitting there going, kidding? I'm not going to take Rodgers. I'm going to take Rodgers, especially after last year where you could have had Tom Brady for a song and no one was taking him, and all he did was throw like 117 touchdowns. So, I mean, I think. The people that are, I think the Rodgers sale is make believe. I think people will buy him earlier. But give me Allen number one.
Would you rather have Rodgers than Russell Wilson?
No.
Really?
No, I think Wilson. I mean, Wilson's one of those, he pulls rabbits out of hats. Runs around.
He does.
The guy he's going to run around, avoid a sack, and then just chuck it 60 yards straight up in the air and it's Lockett's all by himself? I mean, Russell Wilson will go earlier in drafts.
Wow.
He will.
Do you think Jalen Hurts is going to go ahead in drafts than Lamar?
Lamar is an interesting one. I don't know if people are afraid like that they're not going to get the contract thing done. Like, they're going to get big trust. Whoop, whoop. They'll get that figured out. They're right there in the same vicinity, it seems like. Hurts and Lamar. I feel like getting A.J. Brown, like, you finally have a true wide receiver one there. Like, Devontae becomes I think it's much more palatable to have him in his second year out there just operating, great route runner, right?
Yeah.
Goddard, always open, obviously, tight end. I don't know.
Always.
I'm interested to see what's the Hurts progression from a passing standpoint. They really didn't have to do it much. And I had a buddy of mine that drafted him and sort of by default. And then he's just like, every week the guy gets 30 fantasy points. More fantasy questions?
Yeah, I got more.
Oh, riveting content.
Kyler Murray or Burrow?
September, October Murray or November, December Murray? Wild. Every year he kind of hits this wall. I mean, the thing you get with Murray, obviously, the rushing touchdowns. Burrow is not nearly as much, but, you know, Burrow's got Higgins and Boyd and Jamar Chase, and they zip it around a lot. I don't know. You tell me. You're the guy with the Cincinnati intel. How are they feeling?
They love that nobody's talking about them. I'll tell you that.
I bet they do.
They love it, and that's crazy.
That Noah's talking about him?
Yeah, but when you think about the other situations in the division alone, with the quarterbacks.
Agreed.
You know?
But you know what's funny, though, Steve? You know what's funny? Everyone loves Buffalo, and I'm not right there with them. Mm. And I think for obvious reasons, but Cincinnati, if I'm Cincinnati, is looking around going, wait, didn't we go to the place where you guys got beat and we won? Yeah,
correct.
We sure did. That's what we did.
Last one.
Yep.
Better fantasy year, Derek Carr or Kirk Cousins?
I would guess Cousins is one of those sneaky guys that in some league he won't get picked if you're in like a 10-team league. People forget that he's there's Kirk Cousins. And then he'll end up with 30-something touchdowns. Carr getting Adams, I mean, that has to count for something. Although Vikings fans will say we got Jefferson. Yes, you do. Mm-hmm. Carr's one of those guys, one of those sort of sneaky guys, though. He'll have weeks where he'll throw for like 170 and one touchdown. But then Minnesota just runs it all day. To me, it's a coin flip. I guess Carr. I don't know who's rated higher. My mocks, I don't ever get that far into the mocks. I get despondent about what my fake team looks like. My punt.
I like the idea of Cousins with a new coach. I do.
Well, yeah,
sling it all over.
Everything you read about him is that he's the real deal, genuine article. I mean, look, I would think it would make Dalvin Cook more effective if you didn't know you were giving him the ball every play. if you just ran a little play action, like, oh, wait a minute, look at what do we got here? Now all of a sudden we're worried more about where we got Thielen, we got Big Irv Smith out here, we got Jefferson. Mm. Now all of a sudden you just run a little toss sweep and Dalvin Cook gained a seven. Look at me, I'm like free offensive coordinator. Run the sluggo. Is that it? Is that my last fantasy football question?
Yeah. Where are we on the Orioles?
They're not going to make it, but they're fun and they try hard. And it's just, I enjoy watching them play.
Okay.
I mean, that's all you can ask for.
Yes.
They're going to have games in September that are, you know, matter. Like I said, it beats the hell out of 49 and 113 by a lot. Got our first draft Thursday night of this week. Picking number one. I announced I was on the clock. I said, just told the guy in the league, I said, I'm going to take an Allen. Just you tell number two they're on the clock. And yesterday I'm like, might not take Allen.
Oh.
Could it be Cup? Could be Taylor. Oh. Could be Taylor. I don't like my team when I don't take a position player. Remember in the beginning when I said I didn't want to save the Weisskopf stuff to the end? It's because now I'm talking. No one cares about your fantasy team, and they care even less about how you mock for fantasy. But I think here's the thing: is that we're all kind of in the same boat, especially in August 23rd.
You just want more information.
Right. I want to know. I'd love to have
running back for the Dolphins.
No one knows. I actually, this is a true story. Someone tell Raheem Mostert. I have his number. I can't bring myself to text him and be like, hey, are you going to play? Because what's more pitiful than that? Bothering an actual NFL player.
So you're trying to tell me you haven't reached out to people you know in the league.
I haven't asked him. I kind of imagine.
I'm not saying him. I'm saying other people. You know high-ranking people.
I'm still a little pissed at Stafford for not letting me know last year that his intent was to throw the ball to Cooper Kupp 700 times. Like, he could have given me a little vet belt, just so you know, 10, draft him. Didn't do that. And this is a guy who, by the way, the first year I was in a fantasy league, I texted Stafford to go, hey, I'm going to take you in the first round. Are you going to have a good – he's like, yeah, why not? So I took him, and then I told the whole group, hey, by the way, I just texted with my quarterback. You guys are all doomed. Since then, I haven't bothered people. I don't bother – I'm a middle-aged man. I'm not going to – but I would like to know if Raheem Mostert's going to play because I love him. He's such a weapon out there, but I can't bring myself to bothering him to be like, hey, are you going to play or what are we doing? But who knows? Elijah Mitchell, like, is he going to play for San Francisco? I don't know. I don't know him. I don't have his number.
What's the receiver situation in New Orleans?
Who knows? Michael Thomas didn't play last year. He's got a hamstring. People like Olave, great. Okay, but where am I supposed to draft Thomas? I don't know.
Landry. Traquan Smith.
Landry, has he played down? No one plays.
Who plays?
No one plays. Here's the thing. When these draft sites have the audacity to give you a grade, you don't know. You're just, everyone's guessing. No one knows. No one knows who's playing. Chase Edmonds, he's going to get the Sony Michel might become Sony Michel. And then all of a sudden he's the bell cow. It could happen. Where's Matt Breida? He's still in Buffalo? I don't know. I'm so confused.
Oh, God.
All right. Football's almost back.
You got any intel, please send it to Scott.
Somebody tell Raheem Mostert to get it, his boy.
And all your sleepers, send him to Scott.
I don't want to know. We all get the same emails. We all do, right? Yeah, Pickens from Pittsburgh. Got it. They've all seen him. They've all seen him. It's not a sleeper when everyone's wide awake. Raheem.
Robinson, Commanders.
Like it. Might be the starter. Shout to Doc Walker. Calling the preseason games for Washington. The other team gets a first and 10 and gain of 2. Can't have it. Too many yards. You got to want to compete. And then Albert's like, it's 2nd and 8 for the Panthers. Doc likes Robinson. If Doc likes Robinson, I like Robinson. But someone tell Raheem Mostert, I just need to know what do we got? What's the pecking order? I got drafts. I'm ill prepared. We got a show in a couple hours. I haven't written anything.
Yeah.
We should probably say goodbye. Thanks for listening to SV Pod. When the hell school start? Where's the bus? Someone send the bus to Steve's neighborhood.
Please.
Immediately. Okay.